Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. My name is Bob Griswold, and just before we go forward with the other guests, I'm going to just put out an appeal for anyone who would like to sponsor or support the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Please let me know. Just send a quick email to bob@cctaxpayers.com. We will try to get an ad into the lineup with our show. We appreciate your listening to this show. We appreciate your support of the show also. Again, my name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrop.
Pat Park.
Well, welcome, everybody. And I think the first place that we're going to go that's current this week was talking about Daniel Penny, the former Marine that has been acquitted of quote, well, was it murder or was it manslaughter that they have
both?
Both.
Yeah, they charged him.
And they had to drop one of the charges because nobody could come to it, and then finally all the other charges he's.
Well, you know, that was kind of. A little bit legally dodgy that the judge did that, dismissed the first count, because the first count includes the elements of the second count, and it said you cannot consider the second count unless you come to an agreement on the first one. Well, they didn't come to an agreement. He just dismissed it and took it away and said, well, how about this one, which a lot of us saw as an attempt to rig a verdict, a guilty verdict.
One of the things, too, that I think a lot of the media didn't necessarily bring out was the fact that this guy had some serious drugs in his system.
The quote, victim, who really was no way a victim.
And it may well be that the chokehold exacerbated the situation, but that the drugs in his system had a lot to do with the fact that he died.
Just like George Floyd.
Yes, very similar.
Yeah, and don't forget, the police testified in the trial that they didn't give him CPR because he was dirty.
Yeah, that's another point of it.
Okay, so he had a heartbeat. He was living when the police took custody of him.
That is true. Yes. The other part of that, too, is, and I rode the New York City subways to school in the 1960s, and if I was on a subway car and somebody was threatening people and acting the way this guy purportedly was acting, I would be very grateful for a Daniel Penny. The subway is a closed compartment. There has been a problem recently of people being pushed onto the tracks and all kinds of violence on the platforms and in the cars. I think Daniel Penny did what needed to be done.
And, you know, there used to be a separate police force in New York City that rode the subways. That was their only
job. That was their job?
That was their job.
They were the subway police.
They were the subway police, and they were merged into the New York City police a number of years ago. So I don't think there's anybody who has that job of just riding.
Yeah, so you're just on your own.
You're on your own.
If you get on the subway.
Well, you know what you're saying, Mary, about how you would feel if that happened. And that's apparently a lot of the testimony at the trial from the other people that were in that subway car was exactly what you just said. They felt threatened. They felt they were going to be injured. And they thanked Penny for what he did. He defused the situation. He protected them.
And it wasn't a racial issue.
No, they had black guys helping him.
Yeah. The prosecutor tried to make it racial.
Would the situation, the response, the reaction, whatever you want to call it, have been any different if instead of Daniel Penny, it had been a New York City policeman? Would the reaction have been any different?
You mean if he had stopped Jordan Neely?
Yeah.
Oh, I think so, because he has authority to take people into custody.
So you think part of the fact that Daniel Penny was a citizen influenced the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
In that case, we were talking about George Floyd case.
Yeah.
He was a police officer, but he was also accused of using excessive force. But in reality, like you're saying, there were drugs in his system, too. And that did not help. What was the officer's name?
Shutton. Derek Chauvin.
Derek Chauvin. Now he's serving time right now.
He not only subdued
George Floyd, he had a legal obligation. He was a police officer. So that was part of his task to do that. But, you know, getting back about it and being in a subway car, New York has got this ridiculous law that you must retreat. If somebody's threatening you, if you don't retreat, that can be a criminal offense.
But where can you retreat in a subway car?
That's exactly my point. You're in a subway car. Where are you going to retreat to? But the whole idea that you cannot stand up and protect yourself, that you have to retreat, that has got to be the most leftist nonsense that you ever can think of, because that really allows the criminal extra protection. Because the criminal approaches you, he knows that you're likely going to recede. You're not going to stand up to him. Takes away any fear of retaliation.
Well, theoretically, our legal system is partially based on natural law. And certainly natural law gives you the right to defend yourself. But the other thing I want to mention...
Unless it's superseded by statute.
Okay.
And these states that have done away with the right to self-defense have done so by statute.
The other part of this, Jordan Neely had been offered a place to live and some kind of mental assistance. And he walked out of that after 11 or 13 days. He refused the help that he was given. So maybe the problem was in the city's failure to address him rather than what happened on the subway.
And again, the court system was just a revolving door for him, because he would go in and come right back out onto the streets. And now the BLM has decided they're going to sue him in a civil manner. Sued Daniel Penny
for
denying their right to their person when they never would take care of Neely when he was alive.
Yeah, his dad that his abandoned father. The family showed up.
Abandoned him, and so now we're going to sue because we can't have our family member around. Well, that's
his
crazy.
His father deserted the family and never saw him.
There's something very troubling to me with a legal system that has somebody that accuses and indicts someone for committing a crime. The person is found to be not guilty. Then he turns around and has to face a civil case. And the as I understand it, you correct me if I'm wrong, Pat, that the we're in a criminal case. You have to get all of the...
Unanimous.
Unanimous, right?
Right.
Where it's only 51% in a civil case. Isn't that correct? It's like the majority.
It's a majority.
The majority rather than unanimity. But anyway, that's a troubling thing. Now he's faced with whether he wins or loses his case, he just wins the criminal case, and now he's got all the expenses of defending himself in this civil case. And, you know, to me, that seems like double jeopardy to me.
Well, really sometimes I think a civil trial has value. And I'm thinking in the case of O.J. Simpson, because there was a civil case afterwards that I believe Simpson lost.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I followed a lot of that trial, and I understood a lot of reasons why he got acquitted, questionable, but reasons, because it's beyond a reasonable doubt, and I guess it wasn't. But I felt like in that case, the civil trial was justified.
Well, I I'm not saying that O.J. Simpson didn't get justice due to him. In other words, I believe he killed those two people.
Yep.
And I believe he got away with it in that first criminal trial. He should have been convicted, and he wasn't. So there was some kind of good feeling of justice when he lost the civil case. But still, looking at it strictly from a legal standpoint, you prevail in one, and then they turn around with a lower standard, and they come after you again.
Yeah.
You know, that's my point. To me, it's like double jeopardy. You get tried for the same offense.
But you can use the criminal judgment in your favor because, as you say, the criminal judgment is a higher evidentiary standard, beyond all reasonable doubt, or beyond reasonable doubt. And a civil trial is a preponderance of the evidence.
It just troubles me.
Yeah, but look, you can say, look, I was found not guilty of this with more proof than what you need to prove me guilty of. And that may knock out the civil trial.
Yeah, it might. But in the meantime, it's like destruction by prosecution.
Yeah, the process
what it
is
costs
the punishment.
You, what it does to you financially, it destroys you to have to defend yourself.
Well, does
in
Daniel,
these cases.
Does Perry look like he's got a pot to piss in? He doesn't have $1 million.
No, he does not. He does not.
It's just ridiculous to go after him. They're never going to get anything. I mean, the dad's just mad he can't sue the city.
And I know my grandfather was drained dry on some patents that he had that a company decided, oh, they're going to use it and just drain them dry in lawsuits.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, our legal system is easily, or maybe not so easily, misused against people.
I just want to point out that Alvin Bragg was in the courtroom, and his response to the jury's verdict was, the jury has spoken. And he should have run and hid his head, because let's say you ask, what if Perry was a police officer? Would there have been this same mess? What if Perry was black?
Oh, the case would never have been brought.
Bingo.
Yeah.
In fact, there was a case they reported of a black individual who subdued another black person in a similar situation and actually shot this guy, killed him, and he did not even get prosecuted. So just to answer your question, the racial component was so strong in that case, and the prosecutor was going around calling Penny a white person all the time during the trial.
When we come back, I want to talk about another incident in New York City, and that is the shooting of the CEO of United Healthcare and how that's been dealt with by the city. And I want to update us. We need to talk a little bit about what has happened since that event.
Very good. We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. And again, thank you for listening. And also, if you care to be a sponsor and supporter, just write a quick email to bob@cctaxpayers.com.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The God and Country Christian Alliance has a simple mission, but it is a profound one. They want to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern. They want to restore the Judeo-Christian values upon which this nation was founded to all levels of government. And they want to encourage and activate pro-family voters. Simple, but not easy. The God and Country Christian Alliance meets the third Monday of every month at Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. Meetings begin promptly at 7 p.m. and end by 8:30. To enjoy dinner with the group before the meeting, arrive between 6 and 6:30. Both the food and the company are good. Meetings include speakers and discussion, and their annual banquets are legendary. Join them on the third Monday of each month for a refreshingly candid view of the world and our place in it.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, just people in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back, and again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Alan, you wanted to finish up a little bit on this?
Yeah, just a related thing, Bob, that about that Penny case and this Neely, who was obviously a very disturbed, mentally disturbed, emotionally disturbed criminal. He had been arrested, I think, 30-some-odd times. 42 times. That's even worse. And one of the times, he just went up and punched some woman right in the face. Unprovoked, just went up and punched.
An old lady.
Yes. So what I want to get back to is this is a perfect example of how the mental health system is failing the society. There was a time in which, and this was back probably up until the early 70s or early mid-70s, where there was a system in the state hospitals where individuals who commit criminal offenses would be evaluated. If it was found that they had mental health problems, they would be committed to the state hospital. And they would stay there indefinitely until they were able to convince the individuals there that were running the hospital that they had made enough changes and they were following their treatment guidelines and so on so they could be safely released. That's what should have happened.
Some stability.
Neely should not have been out on the
street. Should not have been out. Okay? No.
But what happened was in the late 60s, early 70s, the left-leaning psychiatrists and mental health workers, that not everybody agreed with this, but they launched this program of deinstitutionalization. And they went in and they went to state hospitals and they started emptying out the state hospitals. And they made it very difficult for any patient to be retained more than a very short period of time. The typical thing was like 3 days, 4 days, then they let them out. And I think that's what happened. I remember when I worked for the North Carolina Department of Correction for 30 years, and at that time, we were getting those patients. They used to be kept in the state hospital. They would be transferred to the state prison. We didn't have facilities for it. We didn't have treatment. We had to develop our own to deal with it. But meanwhile, the state hospitals, like in North Carolina and then most of the other states, really shrank in terms of the total number of patients that they were serving. And that's where you get these cases like Neely, where a person is obviously, he's not following treatment recommendations. He has clearly an emotional, psychological disorder that needs treatment. And he's a threat to the public. Those three circumstances, and he had a history of violence.
And you couldn't You couldn't do an involuntary committal. No.
Yeah.
He voluntarily left.
He voluntarily left.
So if you're crazy, we should put the decision on whether or not to have treatment in your hands, because we have a higher fealty to personal freedom.
Than protecting the public. Than the safety of the public.
Yes.
And in his case, it wasn't that they just thought that he might be a danger to other people. He was a demonstrated danger to other people about punching that woman in the
head. He broke her eye bone, her occipital bone.
Unprovoked, just went up to her. And if he had been in the hospital the way they were run 30, 40 years ago, he would still be in the state hospital. He would not have been out walking around threatening people in the subway system.
You know, we're right now discussing the balance between constitutional liberties and rights versus societal allowance and societal protection. I mean, we're free, but you're free to be responsible.
Well, I want to comment on his comment about deinstitutionalization. When I was stationed in Hawaii, it was my last active duty station before I went into the reserves. I did volunteer duty at the suicide hotline, midnight to 8 in the morning on Saturday night. And we had notebooks, big notebooks, full of people that we were told would call in on, every time the shift changed, these people will call in and talk to you. They're deinstitutionalized people. They should have been in an institution. They're living alone. When they call, ask them if they're taking their meds. And sure enough, that's what happened. Every time, you know, you came on, these people would call and check in. They knew the schedule. So they knew when the shift changed, and they would call in and somebody to talk to, somebody that they have an appointment with that gives structure to their day. Kind of scary. I didn't understand the significance of that at the time, but then later when I became the district attorney and we were doing mental commitments, as Alan said, you can do a 30-day commitment. And then when they get out, what are you supposed to ask them? Are you taking your meds? Well, I don't want to take my Haldol. I don't like it. No protection.
No, you're not.
For society. And it's an unfixable problem. Something's got to give. You either bring back involuntary commitment or not.
You do something to come to that, I'm going to say, a better balance. Now, I don't think either side is going to win totally, but you need a better balance. And to digress for a moment, we see the same thing with what books are supposed to be in the library for young children. You know, well, if you don't allow these, I'm going to say, porno books to be in the library for young children, no, that's society shouldn't allow that. Yes, we understand, you know, we're not going to try to suppress books, but there are age-appropriate things. And here we're saying there's societal appropriate standards of living in.
Right, public safety.
Public safety. And like you're saying, Bob, about the books, what does the left do? They put a label on it that makes you the bad guy. You're a banning book.
Yeah.
You're a book banner. Or, you know, and that's not the reality. Rather, you're trying to protect the children from being exposed to things that they shouldn't be exposed to, especially, you know, at that age that kids in these school libraries.
Or here it's protecting society from somebody that just is not quite mentally stable.
Well, speaking of protecting children, that case that's at the U.S. Supreme Court about the Tennessee law that bans genital mutilation and puberty blockers for minors, while it was being argued at the Supreme Court, one of the liberal justices brought up side effects. And they said, her response was, there are side effects to everything, including taking aspirin.
But aspirin doesn't generally have permanent side effects. But I will be honest with you, I struggle with that law because I'm not sure I want a federal ban on a medical procedure. That scares me a little bit. Should it be left to the states, or is there a reason to put a federal ban on it?
No, it is a state law.
It's a state law.
It's whether or not the state law can stand. Oh, so yes. You got it backwards.
Nobody's talking about a federal law.
No.
No.
Okay.
No.
Because I think to me that's similar to abortion. It should be left to the states and let the states, as much as I'm totally against the procedure, I think the states should be the ones to decide.
And see, the purpose of the suit is to keep the states from being allowed to ban it.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
And there are several other states. I mean, Tennessee is just the one that's in
that
court.
Got,
but
yeah.
There's like, I think, 18 or 20 other states that have done something in a similar fashion of making it more difficult for these parents, even parents, to allow it.
I saw this morning that the health service in Britain is outlawing puberty blockers indefinitely.
Yeah, they've been doing that. Other countries in Europe have done the same thing.
When back in the age of dinosaurs, when I was a teenager, puberty wasn't fun. high school wasn't necessarily fun, but you struggled through it and you learned in your struggles. And part of growing up was going through the struggles of puberty. Why are we trying to protect, and I put that in quotes, our children from a fact of life, a stage that they need to go through?
You mean puberty blockers?
Yeah. Because a lot of these kids, they come into puberty, they don't know how to deal with it, and it's, oh, I must be in the wrong body. And that's when the trans community steps in and says, oh, yes, that'll solve all your problems if we put you in the right body. No, why don't we help them get through puberty and come out a functioning adult on the other side? Isn't that a better solution?
It's a better solution, but the reality is that we have this very, very small group of transgender adults that are pushing this because they want to normalize deviancy. And that's what a lot of this stuff is about. Things that we would normally have considered to be unacceptable deviant behavior, they want to normalize. Just like what do they call it? They call it gender-affirming care.
Yeah,
they're not affirming the gender of that child as they were born or what the gender they were born with. It's the opposite. But that's what they call it. They try
to
distort everything to make it sound like
abortion is pro-choice.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, it's not pro-choice.
Yeah, it's not the baby choice.
When we get back, and I'll start this.
No, start it now.
I want to get back to New York City to the murder of the CEO of United Healthcare. That's a very disturbing incident. They seem to have caught the culprit very quickly, but a lot of New York City is under surveillance cameras, so it's not a surprise that they did.
That's not how they found him. They found him at a McDonald's in Altoona, Pennsylvania.
I know, but somebody recognized him from the picture.
At the restaurant.
At the restaurant, there were a number of people that were kidding about that looks like the quote suspect. That looks like, and somebody, some employee of the restaurant said, you see it, call it in. And she called it in. And yes, that was confirmed.
Yeah, and now that restaurant is overwhelmed with a number of negative Yelp reviews.
Well,
because this guy's becoming some kind of hero.
And he shouldn't be. I mean, I understand. I think you're an unusual person if you have not at some point been upset with your healthcare provider. I mean, that's probably about as normal an emotion as you could get. But most of us have the restraint not to do something horrible, which this was. And this kid, you look at this kid's background, he was a privileged kid, $40,000 a year private school, then Ivy League colleges. He was well educated. He had some kind of a back injury that evidently really messed him up. So you don't know if the drugs related to that messed him up or whatever. But this is not somebody that you would look at his background and see that he would commit a crime like that.
And also the victim, was it Brian Thompson, was the victim, the CEO? And he apparently was a kid who came up
the hard way.
His dad was a grain elevator operator.
Yeah. So he paid his dues coming up through the. So everything was backwards in.
And for whatever reason, he did not have the security he should have had.
Yeah. Well.
Well,
folks,
who knew you needed security?
Yeah.
As the CEO of a health insurance.
Yeah. You don't get security in the subway either. So. Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is the CCTA Wake Up Call Show.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in Newbern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in Newbern.
Welcome back, and again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Alan, you wanted to add a little bit more?
Comments I wanted to make about this Luigi case, who apparently shot the CEO of the United Healthcare. What surprised me was here's a person in a restaurant in Altoona, Pennsylvania, who observes this person and says, "Gee, that looks like the person neighbor." Where were his friends? Where was his family? They should. I mean, if you living with somebody, you know somebody intimately, why didn't you recognize that? Where were the people that should have recognized him? Not some stranger who happens, you know, he comes into their restaurant. That's kind of surprised me.
That's what I thought, Alan. When I saw the picture where his face was, I thought somebody recognizes that man.
Pretty revealing.
Why aren't they calling?
Yeah.
I mean, there are folks that I know that you give me a picture of the back of their head, and yes, and I know that's them.
Yeah. That's one of the things that
surprised. You couldn't recognize those eyebrows.
No. That's right.
Those
you should.
Those
are serious eyebrows. Some women would kill for those eyebrows. But, this morning online, I saw a snippet of an interview that Jesse Waters did with Luigi's roommate from Hawaii. They were roommates for about 6 months. You're shaking your head. Did you see that too?
No, I didn't, but I heard of it. I heard some snippets.
He was talking about what a great guy Luigi was and how he worked for the community, whatever community he was talking about, of people that lived in that facility or whatever, and it sounded like it was crunchy. He gave him props for spearheading a book club. Well, the guy that Jesse was interviewing said that he's the one that recommended that the book club read the manifesto of the Unabomber.
Great.
And Jesse was asking him, why would you do that? What made you think you wanted to read that? And the guy said, oh, I'm an academic and I'm interested in all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Well, the Luigi's manifesto quotes the Unabomber.
Yeah.
And you can see then, Pat, like you're saying, how easily that person was changed in terms of directing him to do something that was really perhaps out of a character. But obviously he was vulnerable to that because he mustn't have had a good moral base. I mean, you to do that, you got to be floating around morally. That you can be that susceptible to, you know, you read a book and you do that, and that's, you know, that's really troubling. And again, but if you look back at it from a social standpoint, what did Kamala Harris say was causing the inflation of food?
Gouging.
The gouging of the food manufacturers. They're gouging us. Not, you know, that they have reasons and they, you know, their profit margins small and they have so they make evil people out of these people, these people in these corporations. And they become, then at the next, if somebody's, it's like calling Trump Hitler. You label people these evil terms and you accuse them of doing vicious things, then somebody's going to stand up and say, well, I got to stop this. I'm going to be the hero. And that's how this Luigi guy feels.
Well, that's how
he felt
we
like
got,
this guy deserved it.
That's how we got the assassination attempt on Trump, I believe. You had the mainstream media referring to him as Hitler on a regular basis, and somebody was going to decide, well, this guy can't be president. I'm going to deal with the situation. That wasn't healthy, that wasn't smart, and that wasn't accurate. But when things are misportrayed in our media, there are some people that are very vulnerable to that influence.
You know, well, speaking of vulnerable, what about the women who are sterilizing themselves? They're not just shaving their heads. These women are sterilizing themselves before Trump gets in. So that one of them said, before some random man impregnates her and she's forced to carry this baby.
We're back to a permanent solution to a temporary situation. I mean, these women obviously think Trump is in some way a threat to their, quote, reproductive rights, unquote. So they're going to solve the problem.
Well,
unfortunately,
how crazy do you have to
they be? They may grow up at some point and say, what did I do?
These women are in their 20s and 30s. I mean, they don't have any, reach a point
they
should have been grown up already.
Well, they should have been, but they obviously are not. And then you get the pictures. Now, I'm going to try to say this as tactfully as I can.
No, just let it hang out. These fat, ugly women said, I'm not having sex anymore. And you're like, thank you.
Wishful
you said
thinking.
Exactly what I was saying.
Oh, I know you were going to say it. Just let it hang.
Okay. We're going to change topics. We ran this into the wall. Yes. Let's go to what's going on in Syria right now.
The group that has taken over Syria right now is, the letters for it are HTS, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce what it stands for. And the leader of HTS, now, first of all, HTS is considered a direct affiliate of Al-Qaeda. Those are their credentials. They want to set up an Islamic State. There is a $10 million bounty on their leader. And their leader has said two things that are very interesting. The leader has said, number one, he wants to set up a Sharia state, which is typical of a Muslim Al-Qaeda type leader. But he's also said he wanted to respect the rights of Christians and other religions. Now, Sharia law and the rights of Christians are incompatible. Under Sharia law, if a Christian is allowed to live, and that's a pretty big if, they are forced to pay a tax called a zinja. Not only, and this tax can be up to 80% of their wealth. It's a serious tax. Not only are they forced to pay it, there is a ceremony that they go through in the payment of it, which makes it very clear that the forces in charge are letting them not have their head chopped off.
That they are submitting.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, let's go on to the Syria war right now. Who's financing which side of the war? Because my understanding is the CIA is financing one side and the Pentagon is financing
the other side.
Really?
Yes. And I can't. I read
right through an article that mentioned that, but it didn't give any details on how they knew that.
It's hard to find the details, but evidently, if you've got to go into the alternative media pretty deep to get the details on that. But that is the word that is out there, that the CIA is funding one side and the Pentagon's funding the other.
But Pat,
and the people that are making money are the military-industrial complex.
But Pat, you were also you had mentioned about something that Trump said and something
that Trump,
Biden.
Yeah, Trump. When it started, Trump said, "This is not our fight. Stay out of it." So what did Biden do?
He got involved.
He immediately had us bomb targets inside of Syria and used strategic weapons. And then he has gave a speech promising nation-building money to Syria.
Can you spell BlackRock?
Another thing, you know, that he's, you know, F you to Trump. Here, fix this one, too.
Where's this money coming from?
While you're fixing Ukraine, try to fix this one, too.
Well, who's the one that made the statement that throughout his history, Joe Biden has been on the wrong side of every foreign policy decision that America has made?
One of our former Secretaries of State.
Yeah, I think it was William Gates, but I'm not sure. Robert Gates. Okay.
He's one. And the thing is, this leader over there in Syria, he was being interviewed, and they asked him, the reporter or someone who was interviewing him asked him, "Well, it seems like what you're saying now and what you plan to say you're going to do is so different than your past history of what he actually was, because he was part of a terrorist group, correct? All right, now he's saying he's not. He's going to allow these other these other religions to coexist and all this stuff. And getting back to this money that Biden's talking about, I think this is just a pretense to get us and other countries to give the money to rebuild Syria. That's what this is all a setup. And I don't think they have any intention of being anything else but a typical, Muslim
Sharia state.
And I think that's where he's going to take them. But he's using this to manipulate people, other leaders like Biden, to give them our tax money, which we don't have, to rebuild Syria.
Well, we haven't been, to say the least, successful in any of our rebuilding efforts in the Middle East. And I point out that when we decided to rebuild Iraq and set up a democracy, which we were not successful in doing, we allowed the Iraqis to include Sharia law in their constitution. What were we thinking? The other thing to realize, too, is in the Arab culture, when you have a tyrant in charge, anyone who shows potential of leadership is considered a threat. So if you're setting up a new government where you've had a tyranny, your chances of getting a George Washington, a Thomas Jefferson, a John Adams, Ben Franklin, Paul Revere, etc., are very slim because they've all been killed under the tyrant. So you're not going to have anything that's an improvement over what you had. You're just going to have a change of tyrant.
Oh, I just see Syria now as a center of chaos. He may be in charge of the radio stations and the bus service right now, but that doesn't mean it's going to continue. And in the meantime, Israelis have picked a buffer zone, and we bombed this, and somebody went in and stole money out of the bank, and it's just going to go on.
Actually, what we have to do is we have to figure out how to endure the next 40 days
in
this country. Yes.
Yeah.
So we've got to figure out how to endure that and without going into war. We need to prevent going
into
war.
When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about President Trump's cabinet. And I want to talk about an article written by Victor Davis Hanson posted at The Federalist.
We will be back in just a couple of minutes. This is the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Stop in at East 70 Pond for great deals. Drew and his knowledgeable staff have been serving the New Bern area since 1989. We always try to help our customers with friendly and honest service. Our crew is what sets us apart. Treating folks like how we want to be treated is our standard. People appreciate great service plus great prices, and that's what we're all about. Our shop is like no other. We specialize in guns, jewelry, and ammo, but we have so much more. We have the largest selection of new and used firearms, coins, collectibles, musical instruments, and tools. Our new jewelry selection is growing daily. Find us at 3317 Highway 70 East of New Bern. We're open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Also, check out our website for many, many collectibles, east70pawn.com. East 70 Pawn is your one-stop shop to buy, sell, trade, or cash loans quickly, conveniently, and confidentially.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back, and again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Pat, you have an important topic to go to.
I do have an important topic, and that is the ever recurring question of whether or not Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Bruce Willis, come on out to the coast and just enjoy yourself for a while.
I think it's a Christmas movie. I watch it at Christmas.
I watch it at Christmas
also.
It has to be
a Christmas movie.
Yeah. Tyrus was the guest host. I guess Greg Gutfeld had a baby. And so he's been gone for 3 weeks. And Tyrus was the host last night, night before last. And his first question to his panel was, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? And the people that answered, two of the women on there said, I've never seen it.
And I full disclosure, so our son-in-law got some little metal tins and went out and got some little metal tins, and he's got the picture of Bruce Willis in the air duct saying,
it's a Christmas tree decoration.
Come on out to the coast and enjoy the time out here, you know. And that's on our tree right now. So, okay, where are we going next?
I want to talk about an article that Victor Davis Hanson posted at American Greatness about Trump's cabinet nominees. And he talked about some of the things that they wouldn't do. And he talked about Kash Patel. He wouldn't seriously lie under oath to federal investigators, as did Andrew McCabe. He won't forge an FBI court affidavit, as did Kevin Kleinsmith. He won't claim amnesia 245 times under congressional oath. He won't partner with a foreign national to collect dirt and subvert a presidential campaign. And then there are a few more. Then he goes on to Pete Hegseth. He won't go AWOL without notifying the president of a serious medical procedure, as did Lloyd Austin.
Mm-hmm.
He won't install race and gender criteria for promotion and mandate diversity, equity, and inclusion training. He won't insinuate falsely that cabals of white supremacists had infiltrated the military, et cetera, et cetera. He won't oversee the scramble from Kabul that saw $50 billion in U.S. military equipment abandoned to the Taliban. And then he talked about RFK Jr. He won't organize scientists to go after critics of mandatory masking and defame them. He won't give pharmaceutical companies near lifetime exemptions from legal jeopardy for rushing into production mRNA vaccines not traditionally vetted and tested. Anyway, he points out at the end of the article, we're going to hear outrageous things in the debates for these nominations, confirmation hearings. But we won't hear about the crimes, deceptions, and utter incompetence of prior and current government people.
So you're saying we won't hear about the people that they had previously approved going off the rails.
The ones that are there now.
We won't have anybody stealing luggage and cross-dressing.
Well, one of the comments that I like is they said, the lefty said, that RFK is not suitable for the position he's being proposed for because he's only a lawyer with no medical background. Who's the guy in there now? A lawyer with no medical background.
Not only that, but RFK Jr. is, and I say this kindly, a health nut. And he's researched this stuff as a civilian, so to speak, and has said some very obvious things about stuff in our food supply that shouldn't be there. So I don't have a problem with having somebody who doesn't have a medical degree. The people with the medical degrees have sold us down the river in the past. I just soon get rid of them.
Well, we've worked on what's called consensus, not science.
Okay, now.
Alan, you wanted to take us off to a...
Yeah, there's another topic, Bob. This is hopefully won't take but a few minutes, but... There's a group called Judicial Watch, which
yes.
most of us have heard about, and it's an independent group of attorneys, and what they do is they look for things that are happening legally in the country, and they pursue them to try to help protect people that are being victimized. In this particular case, it has to do with reparations referring to the notion that because blacks were brought over here as slaves, that they are owed a certain amount of money for what they had to experience, either them or not that they were slaves, but their families and so on and so forth. Anyway, in Evanston, Illinois, the particular city, they passed a law and they have awarded the 205 black families have been awarded $25,000 each to amount over $5 million. And this is just the beginning. They're going to do more of this. And what they're basically saying is that if you lived in Evanston, Illinois, between the years 1919 and 1969, you just resided there, you are owed this $25,000. Now, how they got to those date cutoffs, I don't know. But the point is, these racial reparations are one of the most destructive things you can do to this country in terms of race relations. I didn't have slaves. I don't think anybody else, this table did. It's an unfortunate thing. We corrected it through a war. We don't need to go back and relive and reopen these wounds. And that's exactly what they're doing. So what happened was there were six white residents who went to Judicial Watch, and they're being, means, or they're the people they're defending in this case, and basically saying this, giving these reparations violates the 14th Amendment, which requires all these actions to be independent of race. And what they're saying is that this is clearly only a certain race, the black race, are getting this money from other taxpayers. So, and that's supposedly unconstitutional. And the significance of this is if this case goes forward, it will probably wind up in the Supreme Court and would become something that would stop it throughout the country. That's what I think Judicial Watch is trying to achieve. So,
you know, where you mention it, so the person of color or whatever had to live in an area between 1919 and 1965 or whatever.
69.
69. Okay. 50 years. 50 years. But do the reparations come from the people that lived in the same area from 1919 to 1969?
No,
or do they come from me today?
Right, they come out of the tax
funds. They come out of the tax funds today, right. And they don't go to the people that were there in 1919 and 1969, but they go to maybe some relative.
Right, that's exactly right, because it's not only... did they perhaps live there themselves during that period? But their family, if they had family members that lived there, they qualify. So it's like you say, your parents could have lived there, and now you're still qualified for this $25,000.
So let me confuse it just a little bit more. So your parents lived there in that period of time, and there's $25,000 going to whom? To one set of family under that parent? Let's say they had seven children. Do we owe seven times $25,000? Okay.
Good question. But it could go on, you know, once you start down that road, who knows where it'll end.
We don't know where it will end.
And that's the danger, of course. But
it goes nuts.
But hopefully this will go to the Supreme Court, and we will get a judgment that will impact the entire country. This stuff needs to be stopped.
It does. It does.
Particularly when you think about the fact that there were Irish people that came over as indentured servants for 7 years who were treated even worse than many of the slaves in the South because they only had to last 7 years. So they didn't get the medical care they needed. And some of the slaves were treated horribly, but some of the slaves were not treated horribly. And, you know, a lot of the people who came over initially and settled this country did not have an easy time of it. And, you know, if you want to be correct, all of us should pay each other reparations and then be done with it.
Well, you need to pay me reparations because you constantly take stuff out of my wallet to go and buy.
Okay.
I would like to bring up Prime Minister Netanyahu for just a moment. Apparently, he has gone back to court. He's got some criminal cases going against
him. Yes.
And he has to appear in court 3 days of the week, 6 hours per day. And yet he's also got to run his country.
And a war.
This is a trial that's been going on since 2020, and they expect to wrap it up somewhere in 2026.
Political trials happen in every country.
Political persecution is what, yes. I guess, going on. Okay, so we have just about 2 minutes to go. So we want to bring up a couple of quick things. I think we want to take a moment to honor a past member of our panel, Diane Ruffino, who was on this panel back a few years ago, and she passed away this past week, from brain cancer, and she was a wonderful participant. She had a law degree. She also had a microbiology degree and
a couple other degrees.
Psychology degree and whatever else. She was and also head of the
Tea Party in Pitt County.
Tea Party in Pitt County, and she was a lively person. We're sorry we're losing her, but
and we just want to remember her for a minute and appreciate the fact that we had her when we did, because she was a definite member of the CCTA and a definite contributor to the radio show.
Okay. Now, Mary, you also wanted to promote.
I want to talk about our Christmas party. Next Tuesday, or this coming Tuesday, based on when this airs, the 17th
of December
is the annual CCTA Christmas party. We are going to have light refreshments, and we're going to sing Christmas carols, and we're going to celebrate the season. You don't have to bring anything. If you want to bring a canned good that we can donate to RCS, you're welcome to do that, but it's not required. Sit back, have something to eat, sing some carols, or if you don't sing, listen to some carols, and just enjoy the songs of the season. It'll be at Stanley Hall Ballroom in New Bern, 7 o'clock, Tuesday night, December 17th. It's open to the public, and we look forward to seeing you there.
And Parking is available behind City Hall after 5 p.m.
Yes.
Folks, thank you for listening to CCTA Wake Up Call. And yes, Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.